Welcome to On the Couch, a podcast from Reaction with me, Lucy Beresford, broadcaster and psychotherapist, taking a deep dive into the relationships making the headlines in politics today and exploring the psychology and personalities in political life. For the majority of people, even those not remotely interested in politics, the budget is a time when we're forced to think about whether we feel better off than before. And with the cost of living crisis currently the only game in town for most people, this upcoming budget on the 15th of March will focus minds more than many others before it. So to help me think about what ought to be in the budget and to discuss things very financial and economic, I'm delighted to welcome my man running his slide rule over the balance sheets. It's Lord Digby Jones. Digby is a British businessman and a politician who served as Director General of the Confederation of British Industry, also known as the CBI. And he was also Minister of State for Trade and Investment. And he's also a fellow Aston Villa fan, but we'll gloss over that for now. Hello, Digby.
Hello, and good morning, Lucy. Good to be with you.
Thank you very much. Now, how do you feel about budgets in general? Are they very useful? Are they proper financial reckonings, or are they just psychological theatre, do you think?
I think you've encapsulated both of the things they are, really. In you know, greeting everybody to this today, I would just say to everybody, thank God you have a budget, because in a democracy, people should only take money off you. Because remember, taxes are your money. When I hear words like the government are going to pay for this, or we are entitled to money from the government, or why aren't the government helping us, or whatever, it's our money. You know, taxation is. I think it was Winston Churchill who said there are a few more ridiculous sights in life than a politician bribing us with our own money, and it's therefore in a democracy, no matter where we are in the world, they have an annual budget. They have an annual vote by our democratically elected people to say we can take money off the voter for another 12 months. So before you start, it embeds the democratic value that we elect people and we give them the right to tax us for another year. And that people don't actually think of it. I think subliminally, they probably acknowledge that fact. But that's really what a budget is. It's called a budget, which is a ridiculous expression because, you know, frankly, budget, we all know what budget means. Budget means you set out, this is how much it costs me to run the house. This is how much it costs me to have my kids. This is where I want to go on holiday. That's how much it's going to cost me. This is how much I earn. And the difference, as Mr. McCorber said, can either be happiness or misery. I've never known a government that worries about that, ever. I mean, and so the budget is a silly word to use. But the concept of getting our consent to take money off us is extremely important.
And it is often framed in ways that seem more relatable to the ordinary voter, I guess, which is why... Why are we so obsessed in a way with politicians knowing the price of milk? And there was that big hue and cry when Rishi Sunak was Chancellor and he was filmed or photographed filling up a red car with petrol, which wasn't even his car. I mean, what, given that the numbers are so big and given that they're actually talking about, you know, funding departments, why do people get so obsessed with politicians knowing things that are, is it because that's our budget? That's our framework?
Yes, I think we feel we own it. I'm very glad. And by the way, when you very kindly introduced me, you mentioned my time as Minister of State for Trade. I'm the only minister the country ever had that didn't belong to the party of government. And I wouldn't join the Labour Party to be Gordon Brown's minister. And I wouldn't join the Conservative Party to if I was asked to be the tourism minister. I will do the job for my country, but I wouldn't join the job for a party. So what I'm about to say doesn't come with any party bias at all. But I am very pleased to see that in the Prime Minister, we currently have somebody who understands money. And you know, if the other lot get in, I'd like to think that they've got one or two people around who understand money, because politicians love giving it away. It's all about spend now, spend later, ring fence spending, increase spending. No one ever talked about earning this stuff. And I do think that Mr. Sunak is a person. Well, it's from his background. It's what he was trained to do. He's understand money. So the big stuff, which tends to get ignored by the press the next day, funnily enough, is where budgets, in my view, win or lose or shape policy. It's the small stuff that makes the headlines, as you just mentioned, filling up a car, whether you know the price of milk. Does he put another penny on the price of your pint down the boozer? You know, in years ago, it's not so important now, but did he put 20p on a 20 fags? You know, that's the stuff that catches the eye. It's what people associate this budget thing with. And you remember years ago, we used to, at 6 o'clock tonight, the price of fuel in the pump will go up. Do you remember all that? And everybody hurtled out there for 6 o'clock and all that. And it's at the margin. I mean, I mean this in macroeconomic terms, but it's pennies. Whereas the big stuff, and there's a very good example of big stuff happening or maybe happening in this budget, the big stuff is what matters. You see, they're going to have an argument about whether he puts up corporation tax for businesses from 19%.
Oh, well, I was going to ask you where you stood on that, yeah, given your business
25%.
Background.
That's huge. I mean, that's an enormous rise in tax. Mm. And the business community, whether you are a two-man bank cleaning windows or whether you're one of the big companies in the world, with a British base, if it's not for business, you have no taxation. You cannot pay for one hospital. And I know that there are people of certain political persuasions who hate this, but it is a harsh reality of life, because it is only business that generates wealth. Because when you make money in a business, you're going to do one of three things with it. You can reward the shareholders, they pay tax on it. You can actually keep it in the business as retained profit and invest it, you pay tax on it. Or you employ people and they pay tax on it. And that tax goes to pay for the good, decent, hardworking people we need in the public sector, the teachers, the nurses, the doctors, and they pay tax on it. But if it wasn't for the wealth that business creates in our country, you wouldn't have any tax. And to turn round to this wealth generator at a time when they've had Brexit, pandemic, energy inflation, they've had everything thrown at them known to man. And to turn and say, tell you how I'm going to say, well done, and come on, carry on, keep investing. I'm going to smack you with an additional 6% on your profits. Now, if you're a bank where you've raised the cost of borrowing, but you've not raised the cost of what you give back to the savers by the same amount, and the difference you've made as profit, and you give them, the CEO of these banks, a huge bonus because of it, when they've done nothing for it at all. If you're an oil company where just because a man in Moscow invades Ukraine, you suddenly, as chief executive, get a bigger bonus because you can put the price up at the pump. What I'm about to say, I would discount them completely. In fact, if I had done my way, I'd tax them even more, because they did not take an additional risk. They didn't actually work harder. They weren't innovative. All they did were they were in the right place at the right time. And I would therefore use them as a tax generator. But the average business, the average guy in Manchester, Birmingham, Newcastle, Leeds, and he's employing 25, or she's got 30 people in the business, and they're working incredibly hard, they're having all these brickbats thrown at them, to say, well done, here's another 6% on your profits. It won't make the headlines, because a penny on the price of beer will make the headlines. But actually, it's the one that will damage the economy more, because it'll hurt growth. People won't risk, people won't work as hard, people won't employ as many people. And it will hurt the economy far more. But it's not the one that you said earlier on. Is there a psychological sort of take in the country about budgets? Well, it's because we personalise it down to the price of a pint of milk, don't we? Where it's this big stuff that really hurts or doesn't hurt the economy.
I completely understand what your argument is around raising corporation tax. And it seems to me that there's been so much kite flying around that the chances are that in a week's time, they might actually change their mind and keep it as it is and not increase it by 6%. And that means that companies will be more attractive to inward investment. How then does a windfall tax sit with that? Because in a way, Shell and BP, and I think even Shell's new chief executive has said a similar thing recently, which is that if you do overtax us, if you do hit us with a windfall tax, which is what you're suggesting you would do, perhaps even greater than is currently being mooted, that actually investment would be affected. How would you argue that?
I think that's a very good point. I'm hesitating because I could see a middle way, but I do take the point on energy companies because they can prospect again in the North Sea, or they can go off and prospect in the Middle East. You know, I mean, they have choice. And I do understand why, when you're asking them to take the risk to prospect, to drill and maybe not find it, and they're not being given money then to say sorry. So on that basis, why should we say, give us more tax when it comes good?
Well, Shell's new chief executive this week actually said that he felt America was more attractive for energy investment than the UK.
Why would he say that?
And he's obviously nervous.
I think he's right, actually. But you see, there's a middle way, isn't there? I'd say to that Shell chief executive, when the price went down, and for the last month, the price of a barrel of oil and the price of a therm of gas has gone down. Have you actually passed that on at the pump? No, they haven't.
Exactly. She said, having filled up last night in Highgate.
Have you told Mrs. Meggins in Blackburn, Lancashire, that she's going to pay less on her gas bill? Have you, hell? So don't come to me and say, I want more of my profits when it's good. Whereas the middle way would be, if you have responded with your prices to the consumer when the price is going down, I will let you keep your profit. I will not windfall tax you. But you're taking the mickey, aren't you, when you do it the one way, not the other. Now, what you would say to the banks is, I think, if you actually pass some of this additional profit on by taking a higher risk, so you are lending businesses or stimulating the mortgage market or whatever it may be by enhancing your risk, in other words, a higher percentage of loan to value, if you were doing that, you'd have to put money away to what's called provide against that. So if you lost your money, you're not going to go bust because you've made a provision for it. In other words, it takes a lot of your capital to do it. Understand that. That's what risk is in banking. Right, fine. Well, that's where you're going to put these profits. I won't tax you on it windfall-wise because you're doing something to stimulate our economy.
Yeah.
But if all you're going to do is give X percent of it to the chief executive in a bonus, and I've just said all you're going to do, and of course they'll say we don't give it all to the chief execs, and they're right. But if you're going to just say, tell you what, we're just going to give the chief execs loads more money, then I would windfall tax them because I think business has the right to say to politicians, will you help us? Will you enable us? We don't want handouts. We actually just want a boring, predictable economy where we can invest with confidence, employ people, generate profit and pay tax. Well, you're not doing the business equation any good at all in the eyes of business's enemies, in the eyes of the left wing of this country, in the eyes of a lot of the young of this country who actually say, you know, all they ever see in businesses is bad people. You're not doing the cause of business any good if they see this stuff. So I would meet them halfway, the banks and the oil companies. I would say, if you're doing something which Mrs. Meggins can relate to, I'll lay off you. But if you're not, I'll take the risk of you going to America because I think it's only fair. And actually, we need one other thing from the budget. I would like to see the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, and I'd like to see the Shadow Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, who is another person who understands money. She's somebody who understands. I do like the politics. I wouldn't trust many politicians to run a wealth store, let alone an economy. Whereas, you know, we have got a few of these politicians who understand money, which is excellent. And I would say to them, just make a speech where you stand up for business. Because if you look at, you know, it's insidiously put into people's minds that business are always at it. In the soap operas, in Corrie and EastEnders and The Archers and all this, in all these, whenever there's a crook, he's a businessman. But why? You know, why?
To be fair, I think Rachel Reeves has been actually schmoozing a lot of business people with breakfast and almost to try to detoxify that sense that they were against making money and fueling the investment for the nation. But if you've got a situation where at the moment this week, a lot of the focus has been on the immigration bill and small boats, but if most people's sense of who they're going to vote for at the next election is going to come down to whether their electricity bills have tripled in price and whether they can afford to actually pay for the things that are really necessary in their lives. This event next week, the budget, is arguably way more important to the average voter than anything else that the government could do. So if you were giving the budget, what would your zinger policy be to really capture the imagination and make people think, actually, you know what, that I'm actually being helped today?
I'm going to answer that with a question. Do you think it's right that we wean our society off government giving them money? You see, that we paid, the government paid people to stay at home in the pandemic, actually paid them not to work. They then are helping them and paying them to help towards their energy bills. So they have created in the mind, this is not a party political point, because this is a Tory government that did this. So it's not, I'm not going there with Labour or Tory on this. But the government of the day have got an electorate that is used to being given money, genuine cash, to help. So they're faced with inflation, which, whilst the central banks of the Western world printed money for 15 years and for some reason never thought it would be inflationary, is beyond me. But that chicken has come home to roost. At the same time, you've got Putin doing his stuff. That chicken's come home to roost. And therefore, inflation, I think by and large, blame for it cannot be laid at any government's door. On the other hand, it's incredibly difficult to, you know, heat or eat and all of that. So do people want to handle more cash and think government is giving me this? That's really your question. Is this a bit of bribery with their own money to make them think the government is on their side and therefore they'll vote for them?
Well, in one way, politics is often about the infantilization of the electorate, as we vote for someone in order that they make lots of decisions and they make choices that affect our lives. But in a way, we've thrown our hands up and said, well, in a democracy, that's how it's going to be. I need to trust you to keep my country safe or to keep the hospitals running or whatever it might be. But if you're now saying that infantilization process has gone too far, then yes. Then what does the actual current government do about that without risking looking immensely unpopular?
Yes, I think we can regionalise this. I think up in, say, the north of Birmingham, it matters enormously that they feel connected, that they feel that the government's on their side for economic growth and for a form of financial investment, whatever that may be. It might be transport, it might be energy, it might be tomorrow's jobs, whatever it is. But there is a big need for them to feel financially they are in as good a position as the southeast of England. If you're in the southeast or the south of England, possibly the Midlands, you're going to be more onto the page of, I think the boat issue, the immigration issue, is countrywide. I don't think it matters where you are, actually. I think that will be a vote winner if they pull it off. Sunak's got nowhere to go. He's way behind in the polls. He ought to be thinking, I'm going to lose anyway, so let's really go for it. And doing something really, really radical on the boats is nothing but an upside for him electorally, no matter how successful he may or may not be. I think the country will benefit from more financial help, but they've got to do it in a way that people, you just nailed it on the head, where you actually said, you know, they've got to feel that next week, my words, I'm holding, this government's given me something. And so therefore, I think it's going to have to come in the form of a tax cut for the lower paid, and to say that I'm going to carry on, I'm not going to cut taxes at the top end. I am going to have corporation tax rise, personally not to 25%, maybe to 20, 21. But I'm for anybody earning under, pick it, I don't know, 18, 20 grand, I'm not going to tax them at all. And I'm giving you that cash. And a good politician would tell them in cash terms, this will put £7.27 in your pay packet every month, courtesy of this government. And if you did it that bluntly, it answers your point, and the prosperous and the wealthy don't get it, which is good for the argument. And it would be a good thing to do. I also believe that I'd love to have some form of incentive that at the bottom end, if you can learn to read, write and count as an adult, you know, adult, deal with adult literacy and numeracy. If you can read, write and count as an adult and you learn, not only will we pay for you to go and do this, but secondly, we will then assist you, subsidise you into a job. If you get an additional skill as an adult apprentice, we will pay for it and we will then subsidise you into a job. And we will skill up our economy at the bottom end, because they're all talking about, you know, sexy stuff in terms of the jobs of tomorrow, you know, the green jobs of tomorrow and artificial intelligence and IT, and these are the jobs of tomorrow. Factually, they're right. The problem is loads of the electorate who may vote Tory, they may vote Labour, not the point. Loads of the electorate is going straight over their heads, because, you know, loads and loads of people cannot read, write and count to the standard of an 11-year-old. Loads of them can, but they're in jobs where they don't need to test their skill ability at all. And for some reason, we're telling them that they're going to get a job of tomorrow in a green economy. I mean, it's pie in the sky. But it wouldn't be pie in the sky if they had an additional skill. And I think if they next week, they could sort of explain, I'm helping this because it will make you make more money. You will earn more cash in your pocket if you can do this, and I'll pay for you to do this. I think there's something in that. But the issue, of course, the problem, it ain't sexy. You know, you don't to say, hello, I'm going to make you go back to school, has never been the great vote winner of all time, has it?
Well, we saw the reaction to Rishi Sunak saying everyone should study maths for a little bit longer. Yeah, the idea might. And yet that would actually help so many of us understand what's happening in our day-to-day lives.
You hear highly intelligent senior politicians talking about the jobs of tomorrow. Well, there are a load of people who aren't even qualified to do the job of today. And it's no good just saying, I'll give the teachers more money. Because I'm not saying the teachers deserve it or don't deserve it. I'm not going there. But that is not the point. The point is that Mrs. So-and-so and Mr. So-and-so, sitting in usually a northern city, but not always. There are some very challenged parts of the South Coast and some very challenged parts of London. But, you know, they're sitting there and this is all going straight over their heads, because they're worried about the heating bill. They can't, all they can see is that petrol's going up in price. They see a banker getting a bonus. Politician is talking to me.
And it doesn't seem fair. Fairness will probably be the key cornerstone of the next election.
You are absolutely, with one exception, you're absolutely right. That the cornerstone will be, are we living in a fair society? And fairness does not mean socialism. You know, fairness does not mean that I'm going to take it all, Mr. Corbyn. It doesn't mean that at all. What it does mean is I'm on your side. And on your side means you've got to understand what tough choices mean. Understand, on your side means you're not going to sit on your bum at home and watch other people earn money, pay tax so you can get benefit. On your side means I'm going to help the person who gets up in the morning, goes to work, earns some money, looks after the kids, pays a bit of tax. You want to be on their side. So you want to skill them up. You want to help them with the energy bill, but you've got to wean them off this concept that anybody can go back and say, give me more money, give me more money. That's not being on your side. That's running a charity, actually, which is not what this is. I said with one exception, I do think that people have had enough of the boat people. They've had enough of people getting off on these boats. And I think it will, I'm not saying it will win the election for the Tories if they sort that out forever, but it will help them. And the other thing that will happen is you will see the reemergence of a central government, because if it brings the Labour Party back to the centre, and I don't for a minute mean that they've got to go centre-right or anything else, but if it brings them back from the days of Corbyn, back into achievable wealth creation, and then you can have an argument about how you spend it, but the concept of earning it, if it brings a government back to support the earning of money in the nation, regardless of Tory or Labour, then let them have the argument about how to spend it, who would prioritise this or that or the other. But the if this drive, and the budget is where this starts, if this drive into creating wealth for the lower paid, for the ability for the nation to make money, as opposed to just bankers and oil companies and whatever, if people feel the politicians are on their side on that, then socioeconomically will have made huge progress. But in terms of electoral bribe, it can only go one way, which is a good thing, you know. And whether they then make the mind up for Sunak or Starmer or whatever, that's for people cleverer than me. But I do know that there are an awful lot of good, hardworking people in the great cities of this country who want politicians to stop taking the mickey. And if it wasn't a public podcast, I wouldn't have said mickey.
On which note, Lord Digby Jones, thank you very much indeed for being
Lucy,
my restrained and my restrained guest on the couch.
Well, and thank you for having me, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And good morning to everybody.